There's these little glucose sensors you can paste onto your arm, and it gives you a reading of your sugar. And what's surprising is that people who finish eating, let's say 9 p.m., their sugar doesn't come back to like low level till about 2 a.m. Dr. Goyal here from PKMA Labs, and today we're going to be doing part two of the diet podcast. We're going to be talking, I think, about four different diets.
Yes.
Intermittent fasting.
Yes.
South Beach diet, Atkins diet, and raw food diet.
Yeah, I've heard of all of those. I think, you know, part of the reason we wanted to have this discussion is that at the beginning of the year, and still I think now that spring is around the corner and summer's around the corner, people are thinking about losing weight, dieting in general, and we really wanted to have to touch on the different diets, and Sanjeev will comment on what he thinks.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, is it effective, who would it be good for, what to watch out for.
Yeah.
So,
and just a quick thing about the word diet, because
yes,
again, that's again, yeah, we're saying probably not a good use of the word, in that it's, though some of these are fad kind of diets, if you want to call it, probably not lifestyle ways of living.
Right.
Which we really kind of get people to get towards a change in their lifestyle of how they eat.
Yeah, I think when people hear the word diet, it feels there's this like, oh, I have to be restricted.
Yeah.
And really at peak human labs and anything peak human, it's really about having it be part of your daily routine and lifestyle, like living a healthy lifestyle. So knowing all of the different diets, people choose something.
Yeah.
And it's easier when you've got a guideline and you know what works for your body.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think you necessarily want to be counting or measuring things. That's not a good way kind of living. So let's start with intermittent fasting,
yes,
because I would call that actually a lifestyle. That's a possible lifestyle. It may not be every single day, but you could implement the principles of intermittent fasting, which basically means what we're actually, in real scientific terminology, calling time-restricted feeding.
Ah,
so
okay.
With, if you're doing some type of restriction of the time period of what you're eating within 24 hours, it's called time-restricted feeding. So generally, what's popularized is 16 hours of fasting and 8 hours of eating, which we call 16-8.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be 16 hours. And I think this whole thing, we don't have to be hung up on that. The principle is extend the window of not eating.
Right.
To make it at least 12 hours. That's where the benefits start to happen. So if you're finishing at 8 p.m., don't start till 8 p.m.
the next morning.
The
next day, yeah.
Obviously, there's more benefits if you make it 13 hours or 14 hours or 15 hours. But the idea here is do not eat within that window of 12 to 16 hours.
When you said time-restricted eating, for some reason, I'm like, feeding. I'm like, it sounds like prison.
Yeah, it's kind of what, I guess maybe it's a term they use for animals.
Yeah, right?
You know, lab animals.
Oh, wow.
I guess that's what, you know, that's how they were, that was the terminology for
right.
it. So the question I think a lot of people have is that should you be skipping the breakfast and starting later, or should you be starting earlier and skipping the dinner? And so I want people, you know, from the research, it looks like you're going to have better outcomes by skipping the dinner. So finish earlier in the day.
So fueling your body in the morning and cutting off eating at night, even though it's the same 12-hour window, for whatever reason, if you did the reverse and you delayed eating till later, and went, like, as people go to bed, right? Like at 8 o'clock or what, like, let's say their window's 12 to 8.
Yeah.
And they go to bed at 9. Technically, they're going to bed with a full tummy. Is that
why?
Which
has a lot of problems.
Ah, exactly.
Gotcha. A couple of different things that are happening here. One is that our circadian rhythms are built around eating during the daytime.
Right.
Like, you know, the digestion system is turned on.
Yes,
during the daytime and not at nighttime. And so we want to be in sync with that. We want to live in sync with our natural body rhythms.
Right.
And the second thing is that when you're eating, it takes about 4 hours for your blood sugar to come up and come back down. And so I don't know if anybody's ever worn one of those. There's these little glucose sensors you can paste onto your arm, and it gives you a reading of your sugar. And what's surprising is that people who finish eating, let's say 9 p.m., their sugar doesn't come back to like low level till about 2 a.m. So it's, you need to kind of give your body a rest.
After you're eating.
Yeah. So that, and bring it, your sugars have to be kind of back down to like normal levels when you're sleeping so that you can release growth hormone and your body's not working on digesting food when it's sleeping. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, if your body's kind of still metabolizing your food, it's very possible it could be storing into fat because it doesn't know what else to do with it.
Yeah.
So that's why it's good to go for a walk or be active after you eat.
So I know whenever I chose to do intermittent fasting, mm-hmm. the window I chose was either 10 to 6
right.
or 11 to 7. And I really liked 11 to 7 because I get up really early and I don't go to bed like probably until about 11. Mm-hmm. So I do have the time in between. The reason why I would have like mentally would have wanted to wait to delay my dinner is it's like tricking my mind. Oh, I don't want a snack. I want to go to bed before I want to snack on something. Mm-hmm. However, if I wait too long, then the morning time I might like feel hungry. Right. And the one thing maybe you can clarify this for me. My understanding is you could have a cup of black coffee because it's only 30 calories. So you're still in ketosis.
Sure.
So long as the caloric intake is below a certain amount. So a black coffee would be okay.
I think a black coffee doesn't break the fast. I don't think that would.
What about a keto coffee? Because they're super sweet. Keto coffee's the same? Exactly. Keto-ish?
I don't know if that's people use this word keto a lot, like keto chocolates and stuff. It's not exactly clear. It's not only about the calories, but if there's sugar substitutes, it could be tricking your body. Your body's thinking there's actual calories there. So I wouldn't say that's really...
Just avoid it.
Yeah, I don't think that's really fair to say. Water, black coffee, these types of things are probably fine. But
yeah.
So I think the point of what you were doing, that sounds really good. 11 to 7 is a good trade-off.
I think it's
kind of a middle
range.
It's kind of, at least you can live a normal life and have dinner with your kids and all
yes.
that and your spouse. So that kind of makes sense. I do something similar like that. I'd say like 10 to 8 for me that I try to finish up within that amount of time.
Right.
But the other thing that people are now looking at is the benefits of eating just twice a day. So eating early morning, they won't eat anything until dinner and then eat dinner and that's it. So that's another benefit because within that window, there's a time when your body again kind of goes back into ketosis because there's no food.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still getting some benefit.
How does someone deal with hunger? Or can you trick your body from hunger based on drinking a lot more water, your belly's full? Or what is hunger? Is hunger saying you don't have enough nutrients?
Well, when you're hungry, there's different types of hunger. Like there's
food, stomach's empty.
Yeah, when your stomach sends a signal.
Yes.
That you're getting hungry, and that's when there's no food in your stomach. So that happens. There's a certain hormone that gets released.
Right.
And the second thing is that there's a psychological also craving of hunger, which not real hunger.
Sure.
But that's like a kind of a craving. We did talk, I think, in my other episode, I talked about sugar cravings.
Yes.
And that's more like that's not a true hunger.
Right.
So we need to differentiate between what we call physiologic hunger, where you actually need calories and you kind of feel that when you're actually hungry, you haven't eaten.
Right.
And the second thing is psychological hunger.
And the thing is, with all of these diets, mm-hmm. it is recommended, no matter what, that you have a large intake of water. What's the recommended dose? A liter a day?
Most people talk about eight glasses
of water.
A day, but probably helps with keeping your appetite down.
Keeping the appetite down. Okay.
Probably also very good for hydration, yeah. Lots of reactions in your body all need water.
So what would you say is the most effective mm-hmm. way to weight loss if you're doing intermittent fasting? It would be intermittent fasting plus clean eating, right?
Obviously, that's ideal. But the whole idea of intermittent fasting is that, first of all, it may not always be about weight loss. It's just about
lifestyle.
Improving your metabolism.
Okay.
So you may not lose any weight, and you may be like me, you don't want to lose any weight, which is I don't want to lose any weight. I still try to keep within a certain time window. But what should you be eating? So the thing here is that just by restricting yourself within, let's say, 8 or 10 hours of eating, you're naturally going to eat less calories. And just that has the benefits. There's a lot of benefits. It appears that the benefits of intermittent fasting may also be there because we eat less calories than a person who just eats all day.
Right.
Because you can only eat so much within 8 to 10 hours or 12 hours, whereas if you have to have a midnight snack, you're going to have a couple more hundred calories.
Right.
So that's one thing to consider.
Okay. Well, I think that the 12-hour window, 11 to 7, it seems really doable. I've done it. It's not, I don't find it super restrictive. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one that I know a lot of my peers and friends have tried without too much difficulty. Yeah. So, okay. And what's the next diet?
Let's talk about the South Beach diet. Okay. I mean, I think really popular in at least 20 years ago. So it was started by this doctor named Arthur Agatson.
Okay.
Promoted in a 2003 book called The South Beach Diet.
Okay, I've seen that.
And basically it recommends a low-carb diet. And normally the guidelines suggest that you eat about 45 to 65% of your calories from carbs. That's the dietary
45
guidelines. That's our regular guidelines.
Well, what are they restricting it to?
They're saying that you should max out of carbs at 28%, which is about a third. Like it's about maybe 100 grams or something. It's definitely low.
Yeah.
Lower, but what they talk about is that it goes in certain phases. So phase one is, Eat 3 meals and 2 snacks featuring lean protein, high fiber vegetables, low fat dairy and unsaturated fats, limit carbs and fruit and abstain from juice and alcohol. So I think it sounds good.
Yeah, like,
to be honest, that sounds like a pretty good diet.
Sounds doable.
I think the problem here is that people think of this as a diet.
Right.
Like it's called the South Beach diet rather than the South Beach lifestyle. I actually think there's a lot of benefit to the way they're eating here. I don't think there's anything really wrong. It's just that they have this kind of like get on the South Beach diet for 12 weeks and then go back to your regular diet. You can't do that.
Sounds like, what's wrong with that?
Generally, I think it's not a bad idea to go on for that. And it's just a low carb diet. Doesn't mean it's restricted.
It's not
here.
Like
not in ketosis here.
Yeah.
This is not a keto.
Gotcha.
This is not a keto diet. This is just a low carb diet.
All right. Well, I give that 2 thumbs up. I think it sounds great.
Could be good. So let's move on to the Atkins diet. So this is a diet that actually was the first popular diet that came out really promoting a very low-carb diet. Really, that was the beginning of this whole keto kind of movement. And it started made waves in the 1990s and early 2000s as the original low-carb diet. It was developed by cardiologist Dr. Robert Atkins. And basically, his whole idea was that you needed to limit carbs to about like under 50 grams, almost 25
grams. That's almost non-existent.
It's extremely low. So basically his idea was that it doesn't matter what you do, you just need to completely eliminate carbs.
Atkins is not the diet where you eat a bunch of fat. That's the one.
Yes, because you have to replace it. So that was a diet that where you just could go eat at McDonald's.
So Atkins is the one where you can eat cheese and bacon and fried.
None of those have carbs in them.
Got you.
So this was the whole diet about...
No wonder it was popular. Don't eat the carbs, but eat all the grease you want.
the funny thing was that it looked like it obviously had benefits to reduce your carbs because, like I said, carbs create problems with insulin and destroy metabolic syndrome. But what was happening was that you really have to watch that you don't overdo it on the fats.
On the fat side,
because if you eat a lot of calories, it's defeating the purpose. Yeah. You're still going to have to deal with these extra calories.
Yeah.
And so it's not necessarily the healthiest diet. And
prolonged, like cardiovascularly.
Yeah, exactly. There may be issues with this. And it could easily lead to mineral and vitamin deficiencies because vegetables have these type of benefits.
So this is even like it's almost pure protein.
There's protein and fat.
Protein and fat, okay.
Yeah. And then constipation, and there's no fiber.
Got you.
So
okay.
I think the keto diet really came out of this Atkins diet. The keto diet made it much more
friendly
to like health.
Right.
And eating proper types of fat.
Right.
So I think it was really the first one of these diets that really looked at the idea of carbs. The problem with carbs. So I think you have to give Atkins his due, but I think there are better ways to do it.
But it's dated. It's dated.
Yeah.
Is he around? Sorry, Dr. Atkins.
I was going to look it up, what happened to Robert Atkins.
Yeah.
I think he may have passed away from a heart attack, but
from his diet. We don't know. Don't quote us. We'll post it in the notes.
Just give me what happened.
Yeah, I always found that a little bit contradictory because here you are on this Atkins diet, and you're eating all this, what I call crap, right? Like, my mouth and my, like, arteries just feel greasy if I'm eating grease all the time, right? Like,
yeah.
And they just used to, I know people who would make the excuse of, like, bacon fat and cheese and, like, steaks. I gotta think it's tough on the body. But
you know what? It's okay.
He's alive?
No, he did die. He died in 2003, slipped on an icy sidewalk in New York City, hitting his head and suffering a head injury.
Oh, my gosh.
But basically, people started to then speculate that did he have a heart attack? And because he was overweight.
That's always interesting when a person who creates a diet looks like he's not on a diet. So, but that was later on in his life.
Yeah, he was 6 foot. I mean, I know, sorry, we're going a bit of a tangent
that's okay.
here.
That's okay. It's interesting. It's interesting.
He was 6 feet tall and 258 pounds. So the body mass index would call him as obese.
Wow.
So, yeah, they did a medical examiner's report and suggest he had a history of heart attack, congestive heart failure, and hypertension.
Well, it sounds like he didn't follow his own diet message.
Yeah.
So we're not fans of that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's move on to the raw food diet.
Okay, this is the complete opposite. Okay.
And just to say, just a little interesting is I actually did try this maybe about 15 years ago.
I had a girlfriend who did the raw food diet. And can I just tell you, when she told me what it was, I thought it was bananas. I thought it was bananas. Like, literally bananas. Okay, so what was your experience like with it?
It was quite difficult. I mean, it's not palatable. I mean, yeah, the part about eating the fruits and all that, that's...
So what is the raw food diet?
Okay, the raw food diet means everything is... It's been around since the 1800s. It's basically eating everything in the raw state, and nothing is cooked about 118 degrees Fahrenheit. So, nothing is really heated.
Caveman styles, but you harvest from the ground.
I think if there's a slightly warmer than body temperature heat is allowed to be added to the food.
What was that like for you?
So it was very difficult. I think if you want to have
a test? Did you do it as a test?
Yeah, it was definitely. Yeah. It does have health benefits.
Okay.
People do lose weight and all that, but it's very difficult to continue.
They also lose the life out of them.
It doesn't taste very good.
They lose the fun.
And there's something called, I remember that when we want to make these like little breads, first of all, like bread, for example, would not be allowed on the raw food diet because it's been cooked, right?
Yes.
The flour's been cooked. So what they do is basically mash up the flour or like seeds and things like that. And put it to a dehydrator. Dehydrator would be running at, I don't know, like this. Less than 118 degrees.
Need a cold glass of water.
Let it sit for a day or two.
Okay.
And then that thing would become like a kind of a...
Paperweight?
Paper. It'd become like this kind of a harder like paper.
Yeah.
Again, I think there are people out there who are eating it and doing very well.
I'm kind of teasing and joking because clearly this is not a diet description. I'm willing to try anything, but I want food to be part of my lifestyle and to be something that I can do and feel great about and know that I'm feeding my body with nutritious foods and that I can occasionally have a treat. But to me, the raw diet, I feel like that's super restrictive and I would be losing out on, so there's no meat in that, clearly.
Yeah, there have been
sushi,
versions.
Fish. You could have fish, sushi, yeah.
Yeah, I assume there's yeah. But they've been adding in, usually it was a vegan diet primarily, but they've been adding in unpasteurized eggs and milk now, too. There are people who do that. So the risk is that there could be some foodborne illnesses because heat kills off bacteria.
Yeah.
And if not, don't take proper care, you could get some type of a foodborne illness. And the other thing is that there's certain nutrients that are unlocked in heat. So, for example, beta-carotene and lycopene are unlocked when food is heated up. So,
right.
So there's definitely benefits to also heating up food a little bit as well. Not completely burning it.
See, I feel like that diet is likely, not a prescription, but maybe a dietitian or nutritionist would say to somebody, like if they need a change in their body, they've eaten so much processed food that for a week they'd be like, you know what, why don't you go raw for about a week kind of thing versus like doing that for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it could be done like that. But I think why not just incorporate more raw food into your diet? Like, you don't need to be going 100%.
Sure.
I think that's maybe going a bit too far. Like, hey, just, yeah, not a bad idea to have more salads and have actual vegetables. And it's not.
Well, no one's going to your house for Thanksgiving.
So
that's great.
So I think that's where we're at. Awesome. So I hope this was helpful for people. And
yeah. Please share your thoughts on the diets that we have discussed this time. I'll post the link for our first chat as we reviewed five other diet lifestyle meals. Mm-hmm. Of course, we do this with Sanjeev's passion and my passion as well in learning from him about health, wellness, spirituality, all the things that we talk about. And so please like, subscribe if you enjoy the content. That's how we continue to make more content.
Yep. We'll talk to you later. Great. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.